Welcome to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 13th, 2014. I'm Scott Burton, your host for today. We have the Acropolis Reed Quintet waiting outside. They'll be on the show. Looking forward to talking to them. Sarah Everett is also here. We'll hear about her new show coming up at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. And author Annie Buchiever will be here to talk about her new novel, Bristol Bay Summer. Cray Van Kirk will be here to talk about Alaska Originals this Thursday night. We'll hear from Mary McCafferty about the GED and ESL graduation on Thursday. And we'll also hear Writer's Almanac, music, and more here on a Juno Afternoon. Stay tuned now for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A special United Nations rapporteur on Indigenous rights says Canada faces a continuing crisis in terms of its Aboriginal people. James Anaya visited the country last year and released his report on Monday. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
James Anaya paints a bleak picture of conditions for Aboriginal people in Canada. He says many Indigenous communities suffer from poor housing, health, and education. Anaya visited many First Nations communities during his 9-day tour of Canada in October.
There are daunting challenges, and in many respects, there is a crisis among Aboriginal communities in terms of their basic necessities in many of the communities, in terms of their frayed relations with authorities at various levels.
Anaya says despite several positive steps, not enough has been done with some programs, and not enough money has been provided by the government.
You know, I, of course, have heard about the conditions in some of the reserves, and but actually being there and seeing them and talking to people, it was really an eye opener for me to see those kind of conditions existing in such a highly developed country like Canada.
Anaya also questions the Canadian government on other fronts, such as energy projects on reserves, and he backs the call for a national inquiry into the high number of murdered and missing Aboriginal women and girls. The Minister for Aboriginal Affairs says the government will review Anaya's report to see how it can best address the recommendations. But the report is also certain to further heighten tensions between First Nations and the government in Ottawa that many of them already distrust. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation officials in Bethel, Alaska, have announced layoffs. The tribal organization faces a more than $11 million budget shortfall. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has the story.
After a recent audit of the organization, CEO Dan Winkleman realized it would take dramatic measures to get the organization that delivers health care to Bethel and surrounding villages back in the black.
According to our audited financials, which just came out, we lost almost $12 million last year in 2013. That's not sustainable. And we've had to make a budget correction because of that.
Winkleman says 110 employees will be let go across departments, and 50 more vacant positions will not be filled. YKHC consists of a regional hospital in Bethel, 9 regional facilities, and 47 village clinics. The corporation employs around 1,500 people and has an annual payroll of $70 million. Last fall, around 50 positions were cut. Winkleman, who took over as CEO about 3 months ago, says the budget shortfall is a result of several factors.
We didn't meet our revenue collection goals since late 2012, and so that's had a huge impact to decrease our revenue. Also, the federal sequester that occurred last year, that's affected us, and that decreased the Indian Health Services budget, therefore it decreased our budget as well.
Last year, the federal sequester by Congress decreased the Indian Health Services budget by about 5%. That translated to over $7 million in cuts at YKHC, Winkleman says. In addition, he says expenses went up because of investments in a new elders home and in a new medical records system. The spokesperson for YKHC says patients can expect a decrease in access to appointments, longer wait times, and fewer services. Winkleman says even with the cuts, he projects YKHC will lose over $3 million this year. However, he does not anticipate any more layoffs at this time. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
On this day in 2013, the school board in Chamberlain, South Dakota, denied a request to include a Lakota honor song at graduation. Native people protested the vote and have repeatedly asked for the honor song to be included in the high school graduation ceremony. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Support provided by the National Indian Education Association's 45th Annual Convention and Trade Show in Anchorage, Alaska, October 15th through the 19th. All participants, vendors, and exhibitors are welcome to register at niea.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 13th. Scott Burton in the studio now is the Acropolis Reed Quintet. Welcome, everyone.
Hi, great
Hello.
To be here.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's great to have you in town. I've had the good chance. I saw you at the Brown Bag Lunch today, and I also saw you at the silent movie last night, so that was a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for supporting.
Yeah.
You're welcome. It's great to have you here. Can we start? Can you go down the line and introduce yourself, what instrument you play, and sort of your capacity in the band, maybe?
Sure, absolutely. I'm Matt. I play saxophone.
I'm Tim, and I play the oboe.
And I'm Carrie, and I play the clarinet.
I'm Andrew. I play the bass clarinet.
I'm Ryan, and I play the bassoon.
And those are our capacities.
Your capacities in the band.
That's all we do, yeah.
Instruments.
Is one of you sort of a manager?
Kind of. I mean, like, we were actually sat around on the computer today for, like, 2 or 3 hours in various capacities, blog poster, Instagram operator.
It's a lot of work, right?
Yeah. And then you know, we were lucky enough to have an agent who does the booking. You know, they're the ones who got in touch with Juneau for us. But everything else, you know, we pretty much do ourselves. So.
Right. And you all met in college, is that right?
Yeah, we met when we were freshmen back at the University of Michigan. So a good 5-6 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Give us the setting for that a little bit. What was it like when you met?
Beautiful college town, autumn, leaves.
Trees everywhere.
Well, when you go to school for music, it's a time of you know, creativity, and you don't go to be put into a box, that's for sure, if you're going to go major in music, right? So there was a group over in Amsterdam who started a quintet of reed instruments, right? And so we all play, if you listen to the instruments, you know, oboe, bassoon, saxophone, clarinet, they have reeds. And so we wanted to do something a little bit different. And we put it together back when we were crazy and didn't know any better. And it's just been a fun journey since then.
Okay. Yeah. And so we have a song queued up just to give our listeners an idea of what you do. Should we play a little selection and go from there?
Absolutely.
Go for it. All right. Let's play this one. Okay, so what's the name of this song right here?
Tell me about it, Ryan.
All right, well, the next track that we're going to have on here.
Actually, how about the one that we just listened to?
Oh, the one that we just listened to. That was called Warp and Weft by a composer by Paul Dooley, who we actually met while at school at U of M.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what drew you to that song?
Well, we actually asked him to commission it around a theme, so we gave him the word Unraveled, which is the title of our second album that just came out a couple months ago. And we said, run with this word, do whatever you want with it. And so he came up with this idea of warp and weft, which is actually a weaving technique used on this massive loom. And he came back to us with this, and we said, wow, this is so cool how the parts go in and out from each other. So.
And where did you come up with the theme of Unraveled to begin with?
Well, we wanted a word that was sticky, something that people would remember and latch onto, something that had a lot of different visual components to it, where when we gave it to a composer, they could write about music unraveling or emotions unraveling or something being pieced back together that maybe started from nothing. So we thought it was a good word that people could run with the idea.
And when did the CD come out?
Oh, just a couple months ago.
Yeah, March 16th was the official release, and it's done well with the reviewers out there. Everybody who sees it live really enjoys hearing us play the music live. It's really, really fun stuff. It's brand new classical music, but as you can hear from the first track there, it's very fun and accessible. So we're really excited about it.
And speaking of recent accomplishments, you all just won a big award, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, here's an excuse. Please brag on it for a minute.
Sure. Right.
Well, we were. We flew in Monday morning because we spent the entire weekend in South Bend, Indiana. Actually, Notre Dame, technically, at a chamber music competition, which is a competition specifically for classical chamber groups. So, you know, we're a chamber music ensemble because it's five musicians, no conductor. You know, that's the basic definition of chamber music. And so basically kind of like a head-to-head competition, you bring your best music and you play for acclaimed classical musicians from around the country, and they choose a winner, and we won. So,
congratulations.
Yeah, a very prestigious competition. We're very excited. It took us 5 years to succeed there. So, you know, it means a lot to us. And so this is just sort of fun for us. Giving concerts is a lot easier than competing. This is sort of a fun trip for us where we get to express ourselves musically and not worry so much about what the critics say. We're just going to have some fun.
All right. All right. Well, it looks like it from the performances that I've seen. It looks like you're having a lot of fun. Speaking of performances, you will be giving a workshop. I think your next performance or activity would be a workshop at the University of Alaska Southeast, and that's tonight at 7 p.m. What can we expect? What do you like to do at a workshop?
Well, I mean, just generally, if there's a workshop, we just want to do anything that is engaging and people are going to be really happy they came to. So we do all sorts of educational stuff. This specific one is going, I think you should come if you play one of our instruments, whether you're an amateur or professional at any level. So, you know, oboe, bassoon, saxophone, clarinet, and you'll be receiving, you'll see like a 30 to 45 minute little presentation from us. We'll play a little bit, talk about what we do and what chamber music's all about and what it's like to be a touring ensemble and just some general music stuff. And then we're actually going to break down and see some people individually in like really small groups. So if you play one of our instruments, and I know there are some other workshops from other people at tonight at the same place.
Yeah, that's right.
So they have their own different instrumental groups. But if you play anything that that we do, I mean, we don't care how good you are or if you just picked it up yesterday or anything like that. Come on out and we'll just listen to you and like what, you know, what kind of stuff you want to get out of it, and we'll do it. It's pretty loose in that way. Some of the stuff we do is more structured, but this one's just a little bit more generic in that way. So it'll be fun.
Okay. And then you'll be giving a concert tomorrow night at Holy Trinity, and that's at 7 p.m. That should be a fun show. And then you'll also be doing another brown bag lunch concert at Nugget Mall at noon on Friday. So that will be nice. What is the most challenging part of what you all do? And then we'll follow that with what's the most fulfilling.
Oh wow.
This is like an interview.
I'm trying
to get Terry Gross on you all.
Well, the probably most challenging part is to get people to look at a combination of five instruments that they probably haven't seen before and take it with an open ear and try to see it as legitimately as we do.
Okay.
And, for instance, going to the competitions like we have over the last 5 years has sort of been in pursuit of that. So maybe both answers to your questions there are found in the same place. The the challenge is getting people to hear us, and then now that we've probably found some success there, mm-hmm. that I would say for me, maybe the rest mm-hmm. of the guys here, that might be the most rewarding.
Yeah, it's incredibly rewarding to know that the reed quintet, which is such a confusing instrumentation, is actually getting a foothold, you know, in the chamber mm-hmm. music world, and that we're able to bring our new and fun music to places like Juneau, where we never even imagined we'd be. So
yeah, I was going to say, that's all really, like, deep. I'm just glad to come play music in the mountains. I'm seeing ravens. What are those? They're huge. It's amazing. I actually agree mostly with almost 100% with what Ryan is saying. You know, classical music, people think of string quartets, and even people who don't know classical music very well, your lay listener, that'll be something they recognize. You know, we've all seen the quartet on the Titanic and, you mm-hmm. know, whatever. Even in the movie Die Hard, there's a quartet at the beginning, you know what I mean? So,
sure.
You know, and that's not what we do, you know what I mean? But and you'll play another track as we finish the interview, I guess. People will hear that it's so fun and energetic, and when they give it a chance, they usually love it. I think that's usually mostly what we get from our audience members. So
that's part of it.
So it's rewarding when we get to that point. It's really
great. Okay. So speaking of your CD and Unraveled and listening to cuts, there's sort of a triptych or three songs that go together, right, that tell mm-hmm. a story. And then maybe we'll let the fourth one finish that story. It's the four-letter word?
Yes.
How did this come about?
The four-letter word.
Well, it's a piece that the composer, Robbie McCarthy, wrote to be kind of like a serious piece of classical music that is about a childhood story. So the, you know, kid says a bad word and sort of like the emotions, the childhood emotions. And I mean, you know, when you're a kid, any disciplinary issues or problems you have with your parents or your guardians are like the... It's like you can, like, wear down on your soul. It's like your whole world. So he just kind of put himself in that space as a composer and wrote a piece about, you know, if you say a bad word, here's what's going to happen. And then the second of the triptych is a bit of a it's called Second Chance. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, that. And then the third of it, which is what we're going to hear now, is the final warning from, I guess. And you can, it's a very energetic piece. It's got a very mysterious little middle section that people will hear. And then, I don't know, you can interpret how it ends however you'd like. It ends with the big bang, so who knows what that means. Whatever it means to your own, you know, relate it to your own childhood experience. It's a very visual and emotional piece, so it's fun. It's very exciting stuff.
And this is all on your new CD, which I imagine you brought several of, that will be for sale at any of the venues we've talked about today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the next place you can catch this wonderful quintet is at UAS tonight at 7 p.m. for the workshop. Or again, Holy Trinity tomorrow night at 7 p.m., same time, or the brown bag lunch, the free brown bag lunch at Nugget Mall on Friday. It's been great talking to you five. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for coming to Juneau.
Definitely.
Thank you.
And I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay.
Oh,
sure,
yeah.
We will.
We will.
All right, here is the ending to Four Letter Word. Thank you. And that is the Acropolis Reed Quintet there with Four-Letter Word, the conclusion to that three-part song. And now in the studio with me is Sarah Everett. Welcome, Sarah.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Okay, so we talked a couple weeks ago about theater at Latitude 58, but now you are up to something different, right?
That's correct.
Tell us about it. It's Calico?
Yep, Calico. And what it is a just over an hour skit showcase that's being performed at the Goldtown Theater next weekend, Memorial Day weekend, one evening show, two matinee shows. And essentially what it is these five skits. A couple of them were written by me and my dad, and others have been written by family and friends. And I just decided to just randomly do a skit showcase last fall, and I can tell you the whole story of that. It's really quite interesting. But, yeah, there are three comedies, two dramas, and it's for family audiences, and it's going to be really, really fun.
So tell me if I get these titles right. The Crank.
That's right.
Home Early.
Uh-huh.
Escapade.
Uh-huh.
The Ghost House.
Yep.
And Monsters Ball, B-A-W-L.
Yes. Yes, and they're all fabulous. In fact, actually, right now we're in the process of writing a pre-show skit by the York family, who are listening in right now. Hi, guys.
Hi, York family.
And they have been very, very wonderful, and they helped a lot with the acting and crew and involvement with theater at Latitude 58, and they wanted to be a part of Calico, too, and I said, why don't you write a skit, and we'll make it a pre-show. So that'll be a surprise. I will make the official announcement of that during the actual performances, so nobody will be expecting it.
Okay. So let's see. The first show will be Friday, May 23rd.
Mm-hmm. At 5:30 p.m.
Okay. And what should folks expect? What's it going to look like in the Nick that night?
I think people should expect some zany, fun laughter and a few serious moments as well. I'll tell you a little bit about each of the skits. So the first one, besides the pre-show, the surprise pre-show, which I won't give away, the first one is called The Crank, and it's about this old man and a lady, his wife, Edith, and the premise of the skit is based on the fact that the world, like technology, is run by these old-fashioned, big, red-knobbed cranks. And this old man is sitting in his living room, and he has to figure out how to use the toaster, the radio, the TV, the washing machine, the dishwasher, and it's a farce on technology. The second skit is called Home Early, and it was written by Emily Cummins and Quinn Zahosky, yeah, who are getting married pretty soon. Pretty exciting. And they wrote a skit, a drama, that's about forgiveness and about, it's kind of a period piece from the 1940s. And I play the inspector who comes in and causes a bit of drama that happens in the skit. So that one's really very nice. Very touching, that one is. And then the third skit is called The Ghost House. And my father is performing as a ghost, Raymond Homan. And two girls, Summer and Carly, are performing as these young ladies who want to explore this haunted house. And actually, those of you who live in, I think it's North Douglas or West Douglas, there is an actual haunted, dilapidated house that
really
was talked about last, two years ago in 2012. And I wrote a skit based on it when I was doing my playwriting class at James Madison University.
Okay.
And so the skit is based on an actual house here in Juneau, which is why I wanted to have it performed. And then the fourth piece is called Escapade. That is by myself and Clint Farr actually wrote it. And Roblin Gray Davis and I perform in it. It's a mask piece. And it's just about these two fun characters, Orville and Cece, who lose marbles on a hiking trip, and they have to find the marbles, but then they get lost. And so it explores mask movement and the mystery of space and things like that. And the fifth piece is called Monsters Ball, which is B-A-W-L. And it's just a fun farce about Frank N. Stein and Wolfman, Virgil Wolfman, who's played by Derek Swanson. and my dad plays Frankenstein. And these two characters try to scare my little brother, Samuel, who's playing his DS, but they're unable to scare him, so they find clever ways of trying to scare him, and it's a kind of another technological farce as well. So people can expect, when they come to see Calico, a variation of fun, whimsical laughter. There will be video transitions between each skits that are just really nice, so that the stage can be changed for the skits that are coming up next. It'll be rather informal. We don't have a whole lot of backstage room, so the actors will have to, you know, maneuver around mm-hmm. and do costume changes when necessary. So,
sure.
And it's pay as you can. So I want as many people to come see it as possible. I'm not doing this in association with any theater here in town, although I would like to give a lot of credit and thanks to Theater at Latitude 58 for their support, for their help in the design of my poster and supporting me and giving me actors to help perform these skits. So, the basic story behind this is that I was working at Centennial Hall back in November, and I was really feeling like, you know, I really want to do something original here in town, something mm-hmm. that I've never done before. I don't want to make profit. I just want to just have fun and do something. And this idea came to my mind of, why not take some of the skits that you've written before and take those and then make an announcement over the radio, over Facebook, and have people submit skits so that they can have them performed. And actually, Emily and Quinn, that's how they heard about the project. They sent me home early, which we began rehearsals for. And then Escapade was written in collaboration with Clint Farr. And so it's really amazing to see how family and friends will come together and try to, you know, what skit ideas can we make? You know, like The Crank was my dad's conception. Mm-hmm. He came up with that idea. I just wrote it out. So I think the thing that I'd like people to take away from Calico, those who are able to come see it, is really, if you have an idea to write a skit or to put on a show, it's really not that complicated. You gotta make the connections. You gotta reach out. You gotta branch out and put the hard work in. Make posters. Make programs. Mm-hmm. Get the word out, and it's totally possible. So I hope people will come and see it, because it's the first time I've ever done anything like this before, and I thank everyone, the actors who have supported me and helped me along the whole way.
Yeah, and I've heard the names of some great writers, actors, musicians all
Absolutely,
throughout this.
Yeah.
So it should be a lot of fun. What's your target audience for this? Family-friendly
family.
Kid?
Yeah, family, children. It's definitely children-oriented. Some
okay.
of the skits are so whimsical and fun. It's just the kids will get a big kick out of it.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. First show Friday, May 23rd at 5:30. Second show matinee the next day on Saturday, May 24th at 2 p.m. And Sunday, May 25th at 2 p.m., is that right?
That's correct.
And I think I got all of this off the Goldtown Nickelodeon website, if I remember correctly.
Yes,
is that a good
yes.
place to go
and
if you need a reminder?
Absolutely. That, and you can also go to the Jax website. They've got all the information there, and we've got posters around town. And, in fact, I'd like to shout out, if anyone is interested for any future skit projects, if we want to send the word out, we can have Calico number 2 next fall, you know, if depending on the success of this. So it's been a really interesting and fun process.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, Sarah.
It is.
All right, Sarah, thank you very much for coming in. She'll be putting on Calico 3 shows, Friday, May 23rd, Saturday, May 24th, and Sunday, May 25th. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Scott.
And by the way, they are pay as you can.
That's
so.
Right.
All right. See you later.
Leaning over a ball. change all the dark clouds to the bluest of blue.
Welcome back to a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, May 13th, 2014. And I have just been joined in the studio by author Annie Boutchever. Welcome, Annie.
Hello. Glad to be here, Scott.
It's great to have you. And you're here to talk about your new novel, Bristol Bay Summer.
Yes.
So I can't wait to hear all about it. But I was wondering if we could start by reading a selection just to get a feel for it.
Sure. I have to tell you a little background before I start reading, but Bristol Bay Summer takes place at a SetNet site in a remote area of Bristol Bay, and it stars Zoe Morley, who is 12 going on 13, and her little brother Elliot, who is 7. And in this particular scene, they have their dog, an old black lab named Lhasa, and their mother's bush pilot boyfriend named Patrick, whom Zoe doesn't like one bit because she really wants her dad, not this imposter. So I figured that every Alaska adventure story has to have a bear encounter. So I am going to read a short excerpt from the one big bear scene in the book. Okay. Lhasa's loud barks erupted from somewhere not too far away. They all fumbled into their boots and jackets and rushed outside. The barking came from near the old fishing boat. Patrick raced toward it, the rifle under one arm. "Back in the tent," he yelled. "If Lhasa's on to our bear, I don't want you outside. Go in and tell your mom what's happened. I'm going to see if I can find that dog and get her back before she gets us all into trouble." "But Lhasa might not come for you." Zoe was frantic. "She hardly knows you. She knows me." "Do what I told you. I don't have time to argue." Patrick disappeared around the grassy hill. Zoe was furious. "Come on, Elliot. Let's go." "But Zoe, Patrick said it might be dangerous." But Zoe was already running in the direction Patrick had gone. Elliot followed, but he couldn't move as fast as Zoe and quickly fell behind. Zoe passed the boat and rushed through the tall grass that marked the end of the sand, then onto the tundra beyond. She stopped short, stunned by the vastness of it. She had never come out this far before. The great plain of southwest Alaska swept out before her for miles and miles until it melted into the horizon. The land was nearly flat, except for patches of scrubby green and brown shrubs sprinkled with tiny bright purple, blue, white, and yellow flowers. The sky above was Zoe's favorite shade of paint, cornflower blue. She could see Patrick's head and shoulders above some bushes in the distance, but not Lhasa. Patrick did not move, and the barking had stopped. Elliot caught up with Zoe, and together they walked as quietly as they could toward Patrick. When they were perhaps 100 feet away, they could see that Patrick was kneeling and holding Lhasa's collar while the dog stared intently at something beyond them. Zoe could make out a small pond, and on the far side of the pond, two little bear cubs pawed each other playfully. They were round, almost fluffy-looking, and as cute as puppies. Her eyes widened. An enormous rock beside the cubs suddenly stood up and stretched itself into a huge brown bear. Zoe's heart pounded. The mother bear rocked on her hind legs, waving her nose in the air. She sniffed in their direction and then turned and stared straight at Zoe and Elliot. Zoe held her breath. Everything began to play like a movie in slow motion. The bear huffed, came down on her front paws, and lumbered toward them. Zoe's eyes were locked on the enormous animal as it moved closer and closer. She saw its golden fur rippling in the sun, its body hulking and graceful at the same time. The bear moved around the pond at a speed Zoe would never have thought possible. The slow motion sped up. Patrick was still kneeling, but now he had the rifle aimed at the mother bear. Zoe and Elliot stood transfixed, unable to move, breathe, or even blink. "He's going to shoot the bear," Zoe thought. "The cubs will be all alone. They'll die." Zoe closed her eyes. She couldn't watch. An explosion cracked across the thunder. Then two more, so loud they hurt Zoe's ears. Zoe dove to the ground and pulled Elliot with her. She didn't want to see it, didn't want Elliot to see it. That was the gun. Patrick killed the bear? Did he shoot the babies, too? Afraid to look, but more afraid not to, Zoe lifted her head and peeked out.
And to hear the conclusion or read the conclusion of what happened, you can get a copy of Bristol Bay Summer yourself.
That's right.
So, Anne, well, should I call you Annie or Anne?
Well, I'll explain. A lot of people in Juneau know me as Anne, and I use the pen name Annie for a couple of reasons. Number one, this book was partly the result of an MFA program that I did a few years ago, and it was an MFA in creative writing for children and young adults.
And where did you get that?
This is the Northwest Institute of Literary Arts, and it's a low residency program on Whidbey Island in Washington.
Nice.
And so my first class, which was a very small class, but there was another woman named Anne. And so to distinguish the two of us, they decided to call me Annie, which didn't bother me at all because my family and a lot of close friends call me Annie. When I was on the high school ski team, they called me Annie B. So that's how it came to be Annie Boochiever.
Okay, so sort of your narrator's name might be Annie, something like that.
Yes.
Okay. And this is a novel, it's fiction, but it's based on a trip to Bristol Bay that you yourself took. Can you tell us about that? It obviously left a big impression on you.
That is correct. It was inspired by an experience I had about 30 years ago, a little over 30 years ago. In 1980, I was divorced with two little kids, ages 4 and 6, and I had hooked up with a boyfriend that was a bush pilot, and he was going to make his fortune by hauling fish in Bristol Bay at a setnet site. And today they no longer have pilots to haul fish. The fuel is too expensive, and they use tenders that come by. But this was a very remote area called Half Moon Bay, and it was quite difficult to get fish to a processor any other way. They stop fishing there. I don't know if they still fish there. I don't think they do anymore. But at that time, it was a very productive fishing area. So we all went out with him in this little old Cessna 185 and set up a tent on the beach, and that was going to be our home for the summer. And we had a lot of adventures, and I was totally blown away by Bristol Bay. I loved it. I loved everything about it. I was astounded at how everyone kind of lived on the edge. It's such a dangerous work, exhausting work, but exhilarating at the same time. And I always wanted to make a movie of it, but then when I started this program, it seemed like a natural to write about. And so I fast-forwarded my kids' age. I think it gave the book more depth. So I based the protagonist, Zoe, on my daughter, Leora, and she, in the book, is 12 going on 13, and then her little brother, Elliot, is 7 going on 8, and he's based on my son, Zach, who, you know, in reality was 4 when we went out there.
I was going to ask you, was it a hard decision to write fiction rather than more of a nonfiction memoir?
Well, I thought about it. And actually, you know, the first assignment was to outline it.
Uh-huh.
And the adventures and the things that happened to us just, I mean, they just came out naturally, and they made a great story arc. And so, yeah, I thought a lot about just making it like a memoir or a nonfiction book. But then I didn't really want to be hemmed in by that. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, I'll write about that experience I had. And it's true that authors always draw from their own experiences, but I knew that I could make it a more exciting story if I fictionalized it. So I wanted to stay true to the place. So all of the descriptions, including the nearby towns that are in the story, are as accurate as I could make them. I went out to back out to Bristol Bay a few years ago and did more research, talked to a lot of people, heard all kinds of fish stories. And it's a very accurate portrayal of set net fishing.
Sure.
and the environment and the lifestyle, but the story's fictionalized.
What was that like for you going back?
Well, it was really interesting. I mean, when I was out there before, I was pretty much stuck out in Half Moon Bay. I only went into Dillingham a few times, so and I ended up going to Naknek when I went back a few years ago. And so a lot of it was new and kind of different, piecing together the old experience with the new experience. I liked it a lot.
Did you find it sort of challenged some of your memories?
Well, it didn't matter. You know, and that was another reason to make it fiction, because our memories are never as good as we think they might be. So it was good to be able to take the reality of it and kind of juxtapose that with the old memories.
All right. What's been the most challenging part of putting this book together for you?
Well, as a first novel, I had a lot to learn. I came to writing through my students as a music teacher and librarian for many years, and wrote a lot of musical plays for my students, and ended up having a couple of plays that got produced professionally and
won some awards, right?
Yeah, a few awards along the way. And I had never had any formal training. I was an English minor, an education and music major, and so that was, I kind of came into writing through the back door. So I had never even taken a creative writing class before. So it was a really big learning curve. but I really enjoyed it, and it was something that I really wanted to tell, and I felt really compelled to write it. So.
All right. And what's been the most fulfilling part for you of this whole process?
One of the things that's been fulfilling is the story involves, obviously, when I went out there, I was divorced. And so the story is about a young girl, 12 going on 13, who's suffering from her parents' divorce, and particularly the abandonment of her father of her. And so I think, in a way, it's been somewhat of a healing for my daughter and son and myself. But also, as a teacher, I've come across many, many families that have been broken up for one reason or another, and it's really hard on kids. And I know there are lots of stories out there about divorced families, but I wanted it to be kind of a ray of hope for kids who have been in that situation, and they can see, read this book, which has a really positive outcome, and see that they're, you know, they will get to the other side eventually. And so that's been really rewarding to kind of go there and revisit all that.
Sounds interesting. You have some events coming up,
yes.
Don't you?
I do. I will be kicking off the Alaska State Historical Library Lecture Series, which is this Thursday, the day after tomorrow, at noon. And then, of course, there's the cruise, the author's cruise that Hearthside is holding. It's the 24th. I actually can't remember. I have to look. But it's coming up also.
Oh, and the State Historical Library presentation, is that the State Historical Library in the SOB on
yes.
the 8th floor?
Yes, it is on the 8th floor. And I'm going to use some of my daughter's illustrations as kind of the springboard to read excerpts and kind of tell the story of how it all happened, and as well as some of Chris Miller's photographs of Bristol Bay. He had won a Rasmussen grant several years ago to document the fishery, and he has generously let me use a lot of his photographs. And they kind of, I picked ones out that seemed to go along with my book, so they kind of helped to tell the story.
I've seen those, and they're wonderful photographs and some great sketches as well, some great drawings. Well, I wish we had more time to talk today. This has been really fun. Where can people get this book as well?
Well, it's available at Hearthside. It's okay. available at Amazon, and you can even get it on my website at anniebuchiever.com. And most most normal book retailers.
All right. Well, Annie, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
You're welcome.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's May the 13th, 2014. 1939, on this day, the first commercial FM radio station in the United States made its first broadcast from Meriden, Connecticut, WDRC FM. At the time, it was known as W1XPW, but as WDRC FM, it's still on the air, serving listeners in the Hartford area. It was on this day, 1821, Samuel Rust patented a new and improved hand printing press. He called it the Washington Press. It was made of cast iron. It was easy to take apart, so you could transport it in manageable pieces and reassemble it. And it used a toggle mechanism to hold the platen firmly against the paper with even pressure. Printing technology evolved by leaps and bounds over the rest of the 19th century, but the Washington Press continued to be one of the most popular presses among people with small shops. And some fine art printers still use a Washington Press, nearly 200 years after that patent. It's the birthday of the novelist Daphne du Maurier, born in London, 1907, came from a family of actors and writers, spent most of her adult life in Cornwall on the coast. Her three most famous novels, Jamaica Inn, Frenchman's Creek, and Rebecca, all set in Cornwall, where du Maurier wrote, she found the freedom that she desired, freedom to write, to walk, to wander, freedom to climb hills, to pull a boat, to be alone. It was on this day, 1940, Winston Churchill gave his first speech as Prime Minister to the House of Commons. He'd taken over as Prime Minister 3 days before from Neville Chamberlain, who in September of 1938 signed the Munich Agreement, which gave over part of Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler, a decision that Churchill had highly criticized at the time. And he said in a speech in the House of Commons after the Munich Agreement, "You were given the choice between war and dishonor. You chose dishonor, and you will have war." Churchill was 65 when he gave this speech in 1940. He'd been a politician more than 30 years, given plenty of speeches to the House of Commons. He faced a House on this day in 1940 that was not particularly enthusiastic about him. There were plenty of conservative members who wanted Chamberlain to stay on. And Churchill gave his blood, sweat, and tears speech. He said, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat." What is our policy? I can say it is to wage war by sea, land, and air with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark, lamentable catalog of human crime. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, it is victory. Victory at all costs, victory in spite of all terror, victory however long and hard the road may be, for without victory there is no survival. Here's a poem for today by Linda Paston, entitled Spring. Just as we lose hope, she ambles in, a late guest, dragging her ham of wild flowers, her torn veil of mist of light rain, blowing her dandelion breath in our ears, and we forgive her. Turning from chilly winter ways, we throw off our faithful sweaters and open our arms. Linda Paston's poem Spring from Heroes in Disguise, published by Norton, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that's been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 13th. I have been joined in the studio by Mary McCafferty. Welcome, Mary.
Hi. Well, thank you very much.
And you're the coordinator of the Adult Education Program at CIRC, is that right?
Correct. I work at the Learning Connection, which is the adult program operated for CIRC. CIRC is an education agency that serves all of Alaska. But I work particularly and specifically at the Learning Connection, coordinating the adult education program, which includes the GED program, English as a Second Language.
And are you still located over there by Marine View, by the downtown library?
We are.
Okay.
We're at 210 Ferry Way. And under the umbrella that is the Learning Connection, we offer about 8 different programs for adults, inclusive of the GED preparation and testing. There's English as a Second Language and citizenship classes. We have free computer classes in the evenings, and those are really focused on beginners, people who want to be introduced to computer programs. We have job search assistance specific to youth employment programs. We have 2 youth employment counselors that work with students who are looking to build up their job skills and resume. And we also have a family program out at Greening Park, which offers GED preparation and English as a Second Language classes as well.
Greening Park, remind us about that.
Greening Park is a family learning center. It is also a part of the Learning Connection. The advantage is that parents who need to study for the GED can actually take their children to the learning center there. And while the children are engaged in a literacy activity or an art project or their homework, parents can be preparing for the GED or studying English.
Okay. Lots of useful and great programs all around. And also
Keeps
you have
busy.
Yeah, I bet you have a very special event coming up in a couple of days, right?
We do. And actually I brought you an invitation.
Thank you.
The event is called Celebrate Success. And I think the last time I was here visiting with you, we were encouraging students to come and finish their GEDs.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, many did. In the Southeast region, we now have 174 new GED graduates. That includes students who have been studying in Ketchikan and Sitka on Prince of Wales. The Juneau students number about 77.
Wow.
And this Thursday evening, May 15th, we're going to be celebrating and acknowledging those students at a ceremony called Celebrate Success. And it will be held at the Tlingit and Haida Community Hall over on Hospital Drive. The ceremony starts at 6, and we're asking grads to please come by about 5:30 to get into caps and gowns.
And it's a community event, you say,
right? It's a community event. We're inviting students and their families and friends to come help us celebrate. In addition to the GED grads, we're also going to be honoring our English language students who have studied hard all year to build their language skills. Some of them will be becoming new citizens tomorrow.
Exciting.
So we'll also be honoring our new citizenship students as well. Jesse Keel is our commencement speaker at graduation this year of the Juneau City and Borough Assembly. We'll be honoring a volunteer of the year and giving her an award for over 15 years of volunteer service at CERC. We'll be giving out awards and scholarships. So the University of Alaska Southeast is going to be presenting scholarships to two of our students.
Exciting, exciting. And one thing you wanted to point out is this is a new location this year. Is that correct?
It is a new location. We're lucky to be at the Tlingit and Haida Community Hall over on Hospital Drive. It's the big blue building. And a beautiful facility. The event will be kicked off by the Juneau Pipe Band, who will lead the students into the hall. They'll be wearing caps and gowns. And the highlight of the program for me, really, are the student speakers. So we'll have two GED graduates who will represent the class and tell their stories. We call them the voice of the students. And we also have an English language student who will be getting up and speaking on behalf of her fellow students as well. The ceremony is rounded out by the Wushjiin dance group, and they dance and drum the students from the hall. So we welcome everyone.
That sounds like it's going to be a really nice event. So, again, that's Thursday, 2 days from today. To get ready for the event, to put caps and gowns on, be there at 5:30.
Right.
But everyone else should be there at about 6.
6 o'clock, 6 to 8 o'clock, Thursday, May 15th, Tlingit and Haida Community Hall. I want to thank our sponsors, the Tlingit and Haida Central Council and Holland America Line. They've helped us put this together.
Well, Mary McCafferty, thank you for coming in today and telling us about this event. And thanks for all the hard work you all do down there. And congratulations to all the graduates.
Yeah, thanks very much. We're proud of them.
You're welcome.
Offering coffee break service for the office, delivering fresh roasted coffees, brewing equipment, and beverage supplies to offices and businesses around Southeast. Information at heritagecoffee.com.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon here today on Tuesday, May 13th, 2014. Your host tomorrow will be Lori Scanling, and we'll talk with K.J. Metcalf about the upcoming Friends of Admiralty and Goon cruise. Wade Davis will be here with a preview of his presentation on the Sacred Waters campaign that night. And Fuller will talk with Rachel Weaver about her new book, Point of Direction. And we'll get an update on Boeing Perseverance Theater's current production. And we'll talk with Paul Rosenthal and Arnif von Arnim about their performances during this year's Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. If you miss a Juneau Afternoon or want to listen again, you can catch it and other local, statewide, national, and international news at ktoo.org. Now go to All Things Considered.